keeping you informed. Mark Brenne on CFAX 1070.
Three 38, 22 before 4. The people who keep an eye on our killer whales say the federal government blew it with its decision to greenlight the expansion of the Trans Mountain oil pipeline. The Raincoast Conservation Foundation, along with partners EcoJustice and Living Oceans Society, are planning to go to court to challenge the Fed's reapproval of the Trans Mountain. The groups say the added oil tankers in the waters off our coast are going to make it even more difficult for the southern resident killer whales to seek out, find, and eat salmon. My guest is Misty McDuffie, Wild Salmon Program Director at the Raincoast Conservation Foundation. Good afternoon, Misty.
Hi, Mark.
What are you basing this court challenge on?
Well, it's the same argument that we've been making for some time now. So this is a small, declining population of endangered killer whales. That's recognized by everyone. And that it's also widely recognized, including by the National Energy Board, that that the increase in tanker traffic is going to have, what the in the words of the National Energy Board, significant adverse effects. And even though they haven't expressed it as explicitly in this round, in previous rounds, they've also recognized that these effects cannot be mitigated. There's nothing that we can really do to prevent the noise from these tankers. And so if we just look at the noise, that takes the risk of extinction from being a declining, small declining population that has somewhere around 7 to 10% risk of extinction within the next 100 years, to going to up to a 24% risk of extinction from noise alone. And then if we factor in other associated risks, so that part is a certainty, the noise. And then we move into the risk factor, which is what happens if there's an oil spill, what happens if there's ship strikes, what happens if there's loss to other pollution associated with increase in tanker traffic. And then that takes the probability to a greater than 50% chance. So based on that, the fact that but even if we just focus on the noise, which is the part about this equation that is the certainty, it's not so much the risk of an oil spill, but if we just focus on noise, that Species at Risk Act says that we have got to mitigate the effects of projects like this on endangered populations. And if you can't mitigate those effects, then your project can't proceed. So that's essentially our legal argument.
Yeah, and I hear you, and it makes perfect sense. Let's take this one step at a time. Your organization says this in a news release. Entrusted to protect the southern residents, the federal government has struggled for years to fulfill its responsibility amid overdue and delayed recovery strategies. Let's take the noise factor, Misty, right off the top here. We do know there is technology for these big ships to at least lower the noise factor of the big propellers, the big engines they use. We know this. This is just a fact. The military has it. Other ships, some ships are using it. We also know that it costs money, and corporations who are controlled by shareholders don't like spending money. They don't care about fish. They don't care about you. Then they don't care about me. That's just the reality of the world in which we live. What do you think the federal government could do? I mean, we've got ships in our waters that come from everywhere in the world. Do we have the power? Does the federal government have the power, as an example, to say, okay, China, your ships are coming through our waters. This is a Canadian law. You have to have this kind of engine or these kinds of engines, which are noise diffusing or whatever the word might be, but they lower the noise of the engines in order to come through our waters. I think the Chinese would say, oh, yeah, we're not going to pay attention or we're not going to come. So what power do the feds have to do something about the noise factor?
They do have the power, but they don't want to exercise that power without having it regulated through the International Maritime Organization, because they don't want they want to continue to facilitate trade. So they want everybody to quiet their ships and implement this technology, which, as you say, does exist. So Canada's not willing to go it alone and say to put those kind of laws in place. Now, the EU is moving in that direction already. Like, they're recognizing, they're trying to quiet their waters there, and so they've got criteria for entering their waters. But Canada is really pursuing this more at a global level than a local level. And ultimately, I agree with you, I think it will happen. But the problem is that it doesn't exist now, and these whales don't have that time period to wait another decade or two while we figure this out. This is such a critical time for them that if we don't have all hands on deck right now to reduce these threats and to ensure that the pregnancies that some of these whales have and the calves that they're having stay alive, then we lose this ability to recover these whales, which is, you know, why projects like this are such a bad idea.
And again, you say that the percentage, the chance of these whales becoming extinct, gone, by the way, the dodo bird, the dinosaur, 24% in the next century.
Over the next century, yeah, just given the increase in noise. And that's sort of based on the conditions that were in the Salish Sea several years ago, and we weren't seeing, you know, whales not show up for, you know, 2 months when normally they would be in these waters. And so the concern is that the quality of their critical habitat in the Salish Sea has further declined since we did that analysis, and Chinook stocks have further declined. So really, all of this is, it always comes back to salmon. And the reason that noise is such an important consideration is because it effectively acts to reduce that consumption of salmon. It interferes with their ability to successfully feed. So, and when Chinook stocks even, you know, further decline, the impact of noise is intensified and makes it even harder for them to catch those fish.
Well, you know the fish. You are the program director with the Rain Coast Conservation Foundation, the program of salmon, wild salmon. Misty, hang on the line. Going to do a little business. Come right back and continue our conversation. Misty McDuffie, wild salmon program director with the Rain Coast Conservation Foundation.
It's Mark Brenet on CFAX 1070.
Twelve before four, for the second time in the same calendar year, the Rain Coast Conservation Foundation, along with some of its partner groups, environmental groups mostly, are planning to go to court to challenge the feds and the federal government's decision to approve the Trans Mountain Pipeline expansion. They won the first time last August, and that's why the Trans Mountain Pipeline expansion was put on ice. But as you know, that ice has thawed, and apparently all systems are go. Let's continue with our conversation with Misty McDuffie, Wild Salmon Program Director with the Rain Coast Conservation Foundation. Misty, you won last time on the same basis. How do you figure you'll win this time?
Well, the argument last time was that the NEB aired when it decided to truncate the project in Burnaby. And so we argued that this project couldn't proceed because it violated SARA. So that what the National Energy Board did as a consequence of that is they said, okay, well, marine shipping isn't part of this project. This project now ends in Burnaby. And so the court said, no, you can't do that. You have to consider the implications of marine shipping on these whales. And so they went back and they did that, and they said, okay, well, we considered the implication on the whales, and yes, there are significant adverse effects, yes, but this is a trade-off, and we still recommend going ahead with this project. And so we're saying, well, it's still not lawful that you make that decision, because you are obligated to not proceed with this project if you can't mitigate its effects.
What do you say to those who say, look, and I've asked this question many times, and I think I've asked this of you as well, the horse is out of the barn. A lot of people say that. Let's just go ahead with this.
Well, I think that, you know, as this project is unfolded over time, that, you know, the reasons to not go ahead with it only grow. And, you know, the country declared a climate emergency on the eve of approving this project. And whether it's a climate emergency, a biodiversity crisis, or the fact that probably in the near future, there's not going to be an economically viable purchasers for this project, that it really is a lost opportunity to sort of get on with other pursuits for energy, for diversifying our economy, for all these other things. And we just keep digging this hole deeper, unfortunately.
Well, as you said, Misty, in a report that was released earlier this year, the National Energy Board itself drew that very conclusion, that if we go ahead with this project, it will, quote, likely cause significant adverse environmental effects on the southern resident killer whales and on indigenous cultural use associated with the southern resident killer whale. To me, you bring that up in court, it seems pretty, I don't know, I'm not saying it's a sure winner, but that's a pretty compelling argument just there. Look, NEB, you yourself said this is going to affect the health of the southern resident killer whales. I don't know how they're going to be able to dodge that.
Yeah, and we would agree. And what they didn't say just in that sentence is that, and these effects can't be mitigated. And that's really, that's where the Species at Risk Act says that you must mitigate these significant adverse effects. And if you can't, then your project can't proceed. So that's the bulk of our argument, yep, as you flagged it.
Okay, so what happens next? When did the lawyers file?
This morning.
Okay.
And so the first stage is always that they have to agree that we have a valid case, and that's step one. And once the courts agree that we have a valid case, then it proceeds to all the wheels are set in motion to be argued in front of a panel.
Where does your organization and the others involved get the money to spend on lawyers to pay to, you know, fight the federal government? And, of course, which has, you know, taxpayer money and has just basically a bottomless pit of cash roll.
Yeah, so we have both, you know, philanthropic organizations and individuals that support us on this. And we also, our partnering organization is EcoJustice. And so EcoJustice brings their lawyers to the table, and they pay for the time of their lawyers, and we pay for all associated expenses. So so it's not, we don't have to front all of the legal time that the lawyers put into it. That's part of our partnership with EcoJustice. But our donors do support us on those associated costs, and also we risk losing. And when we lose, or if we lose, which we haven't lost on southern residents in all of the cases that we've filed on them, but if we do, then we can be liable for costs. So those are costs that Raincoast would have to incur.
Gotcha. Okay. So the filing took place this morning. What's
yes.
the next step when we will hear something else?
Well, hopefully we'll know within the next few weeks whether our case proceeds.
Okay. We wish you the best. Hey, listen, we're talking about killer whales, and for some time we have not seen neither resident killer whales, the southern nor the northern. But in the last several weeks, we have. Let's start with the northern resident killer whales. They've come back. What's happened there?
So the northerns, there's a lot more of them, and I'm not sure where they weren't or were over the last few months, but their range is up the central coast from, you know, north of Campbell River all the way up to southeast Alaska. So you could find northern residents in different places at different times, you know, pursuing salmon and out near in Dixon Entrance and different places. But the southern residents down here, however, normally would be in the inside waters of the Salish Sea, feeding on Chinook, largely returning to the Fraser River by now, like by May and June for sure. And they, because of that collapse in the early-timed Chinook returning to the Fraser, they have not been in the inside waters. And they have been, there's been some sightings of them out off the west coast, but they're out there fishing on a larger aggregation of Chinook that are moving down the west side of North America from Vancouver Island all the way down to Monterey, California. And if they're intercepting those fish, there likely is a higher abundance of those fish, and that is likely where they've been.
Yeah, because we're starting to see photos in the last couple of days. Apparently, one of the whales spotted was A73, and you know her as Springer, right? Do you know Springer?
Yes. So, and when you say spotted, where was A73 spotted?
Let's see here. It says here. Well, it says off northern Vancouver Island, and it says they're going to hang around the Johnstone Strait.
Yep. So, and that's all part of the northern resident critical habitat is Johnson Strait, but they've expanded that out off the west coast of Vancouver Island. So even Swiftsure Bank off the west side of Vancouver Island is now critical habitat for both northern and southern resident killer whales.
Should mention, because I mentioned the name of that A73, what's the significance of that particular whale?
So that was a whale that went astray and was held down in Puget Sound because it was separated from its pod, and then it was re-released back with the hopes that it could rejoin its pod, and Springer did rejoin her pod.
Very rare, huh?
Well, there's not a lot of successful cases like that. Luna would have been another one where they were going to try to maybe capture that whale and try to re-release her in with her pod once he became separated. But then he died, unfortunately, before that could happen.
Gotcha. We got to take off for the news, traffic, and weather. But the southern resident killer whales, according to the Seattle Times on the weekend, were reported, J and K pods, not too far from San Juan Island.
Yeah, they've been back here, and I was actually just there were whales out here about an hour ago. They were about a kilometer off though, and I couldn't tell from where I was whether they were residents or transients. But they are definitely back here around the Gulf Islands.
Misty, thank you for this. Always appreciate speaking with you.
Thank you, Mark.
Take care. Misty McDuffie, Wild Salmon Program Director with the Raincoast Conservation Foundation.